There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
We are back from our long hiatus, and I'm happy to report that Mike's surgery went very well, and he is finally the pony he always was inside. So proud of you, Mike. So brave. But we're jumping back into our series. This looks like a good place for a stick-up. With both feet and all four hooves, checking out Spike Lee's 2006 film, Inside Man. This film is a beautifully metaphorical look at the emotional turmoil of a pre-adolescent girl as she moves from the Midwest to San Francisco, where we see her emotions manifest as individual character. Hang
what
on, this doesn't
did you
sound
watch?
Right. I don't think Spike Lee does animated movies, does he? Oh, crap, that's Inside Out.
Oh, God.
Oh, well, yeah. Oh, dear.
Oh, it's not like there aren't other films called Inside Man either. So
that's true. Inside Man, this one, is a star-studded heist movie with Denzel Washington, Jodie Foster, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Captain Von Trapp. Hey, give me a break. It's been a few weeks. I'm already rusty. Not only am I rusty, I'm your host, Max Hooker's a Good Cop, Levine. And over there, munching on a bundle of hay and oats, is your host, Mike Loose. Give us a clip-clop, Mike.
No.
Oh, please.
No.
Just a bit of clip-clop.
Turn into a pony? No. Thankfully, that is not possible.
We could finally replace Bumpy.
No, nothing can replace Bumpy. He's our mascot.
But you know what can replace Bumpy? Our poll question. How's that for a transition?
Brilliant.
I thought so. Thank you. Golf clap, golf clap.
Poll question.
Many moons ago, we asked you, what is your choice for the most ludicrous, ridiculous movie plot? Kelly J. Cooper says, well, I mean, Clue seems like the obvious answer, but that was on purpose. Mm. Hey, we never said it had to accidentally be that way.
Sure.
Not finding Tatum's ridiculous enough, Richard Tatum simply said, how much time you got? There's plenty. And we never heard from him again.
No. Oh.
Coincidence?
No, I think he just forgot.
That's what they want you to think.
Nobody wants you to think that.
That's what other people want you to think that they don't want. Dan Schaefer says, Highlander 2, The Quickening. Yeah, incoherent and a complete 180 from the lore established on the first one. Sean Connery's character brought back to life solely to fulfill his contractual obligation. If not for Michael Ironside's delightful mastication of all the scenery, it would have been unwatchable.
That means to chew.
Yep. Remember Planet Zeist?
Apparently not. Remember, we couldn't find the copy that still had it in it. It'd been expunged.
Yeah. Regan McStravick says, I want to say Idiocracy, but time has shown it to be, if anything, understated.
Yeah.
I wish you were wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, for a little less pessimistic answer, gotta go with Swiss Army Man. Yep, ludicrous and unbelievable in all the best ways. Oh, gotta add one more. Dave built a maze. Well, good job, Dave.
Never
awesomely ludicrous. Never, don't know that one. Swiss Army Man is indeed pretty friggin' ludicrous, but is fun to watch.
Never seen it.
Daniel Radcliffe plays a corpse in the entire movie. Nick Hoffman says Zardoz. Utter gibberish.
I mean, who doesn't want to see Sean Connery in his underpants? You know, because that's...
And his wig. Brian Mundo says, got me again. The Fifth Element was totally believable, so I can't use it. Shucks. Ha! See, Brian, we got it so you couldn't mention... Don't! Curse you, Mundo! Byron Ho says, Titanic. Jack could have fit on the board. No, they did that on Mythbusters. They proved it wasn't the size of the board, it was the buoyancy.
Yeah. Everyone knows he used unbuoyant wood in that ship.
Exactly. If you're on a boat, you use wood that sinks. Mm. Charles Forsythe said, Atlas Shrugged was made into a trio of terrible films. Really? I did not know there was a trio. I can say that I saw the first one, and it was somehow worse than the book. Ouch.
Wow.
I've seen parts of the follow-up and could not bring myself to watch more than clips. The movie that had the most ludicrous, unbelievable plot I've ever seen would be Face Off. Okay. I still liked it, maybe because of my affinity for John Woo. Hopefully someone could claim to have seen Moonfall, because that sounds like an all-time winner. I'm sure we'll get to that.
The moon will help us.
Ag! Ag, I say, ag!
Now I'll wait for you in the Lambda Zone.
Shove it up your Lambda Zone. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Don't see our entire episode on John Boy of Outer Space.
Yep. Dave to Dave, Dave to Dave, Dave to Dave, Dave, Dave to Dave, Dave to Dave,
Dave to Dave, Dave to Dave.
Says, for me, The Deer Hunter ranks as particularly ludicrous. Okay, I think this is the first Oscar winner we've had up here.
Yeah.
A cage in the river where you will be nibbled on by rats, or you would have to play Russian roulette. I thought that was what Spirit Airlines was like. Sure,
we'll never know.
Plus a koan. If a deer doesn't die in the forest and only I know about it, would anybody care? Well, when you put it like that. Huh. All right, I got to think about that one. I never really thought of The Deer Hunter as ludicrous, but okay. On the Japan side, the ludicrous works for me a lot of the time. I might vote for Kamikaze Girls. Oh, yeah. Fun movie, but ludicrous. That I absolutely loved and have seen multiple times, but there are a lot of zany Japanese flicks. It may be something they do well. Haven't you ever heard of all those zany Japanese flicks?
I believe the word is zany hijinks.
Hijinks, yes. I think there it's hijinku.
No.
It is now. Use it, Japan. You're welcome. Angelo Patsalis says, The Tree of Life with Brad Pitt. Never saw it. I've heard it's pretty ludicrous.
That was Darren Aronofsky, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I think so. Oh, no, I'm thinking of The Fountain. Never mind. It had a tree in it. So, you know, you can see why I was confused. It had in it.
There was a tree in it. Oh, brother.
I get all tree pictures confused.
I'll tree you.
Hum-hum.
And of course, from that ludicrous country far to the north, it's wacky Canadian Vince. Tell us about hockey, Vince. So many ridiculous movies to choose from. He ain't wrong. 2012 and The Core are really out there.
Yeah.
And here we are. But Moonfall might beat them. Might. I find the film Face Off to be really ridiculous as well.
Yep.
I mean, the two characters had surgery that exchanged their faces, and then we are to believe that they can move into each other's families and work positions. No one notices their voices are different. Plus, they're married. How do their wives not know immediately? That's not the, well, let's say changing your face falls apart when you're naked with someone who knows what your body looks like.
Yeah.
I went for more mainstream films, since if we go for lower budget and bad movies, we might be here all night. Gotta give you that one, Vince.
Sure, he was a head taller than Bella, but with the cape up, Ed figured the audience would never know.
You know, I looked that up there. John Travolta and Nick Cage are within an inch of each other in height. They're just completely different builds, body type, and facial shapes.
And everything else.
And everything else.
Yeah.
And of course, Velo Lading says, I'll exclude fantasy, adventure, and sci-fi from this. Wow, you are kind of hobbling yourself at the beginning, but okay. They require a suspension of disbelief that forgives ludicrous world building. All right, that's fair. For me, the contemporary film that comes to mind as ludicrous and unbelievable is Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. You know, the story is just creepy. Yeah, I get that. Think about it. The father is so desperate to see his kids more, he wears latex makeup, a wig, and a bodysuit to impersonate a housekeeper. He tells elaborate lies over many days and allows his ex-wife to befriend him. The kids don't realize it for weeks or months. The ex-wife doesn't realize it until the end. The man takes money from the family for his services. Just how long was all this going to go on?
A little too long.
Only Robin Williams could carry this movie. It's a treasure because of his performance for the ages, but it's ludicrous and unbelievable. You know, that's a pretty sound argument.
I mean, it's no more ludicrous than thinking that Jack Lemmon and or Tony Curtis are women.
They weren't? Oh my God! Nobody's perfect.
See our entire episode on Some Like It Hot.
Yeah. And, okay, oh, it may be a little cool by now, but we still have a hot message from our hotline.
Do we?
From that little cutie patootie, Doris Hempelmeyer.
Do we?
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question, which just happens to be, what is your choice for the most ludicrous, ridiculous movie plot? Oh, my gosh, you guys. There are so many. You know, there's a movie about sharks in a cornfield. Yeah, sharks in a cornfield. But I'm not going to pick that one. I'm going to go with a big movie, big release movie that had a budget over $1,000. I'm going to go with The Core. I don't think I have to explain that one. There are so many things that are wrong with this. I screamed when I watched it. Yuck. Anyway, that's my answer. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I look forward to hearing you again soon. Bye, Max.
Oh, I can't believe she nixed sharks in a cornfield. I mean, I get The Core, her choice of The Core. Yes. Yeah,
oh,
that is
boy.
That is pretty friggin' ludicrous. We're going to drive to the middle of the earth.
I mean,
no, you're not.
Not unless you're bringing Gertrude with you.
Yeah, Gertrude. Unless somebody on Gertrude. That ship was named Sacknussen, it's not happening.
I still remember when we saw that at the science fiction film marathon, and they get to the center on the raft, and the magnetic core or whatever yanks the accordion out of Pat Boone's hands, and everybody clapped.
Everyone nuts. Yep. Best part of the movie.
It was the best part of the movie, but
these were the best part of our show. These are great answers. Thank you so much.
We love
and
them.
We want more. Lots more.
But
so many more.
Well, we also want more. We want one from you, Max. What is the film that has, to you, the most ludicrous plot ever?
Given the types of movies you and I watch for fun, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches, kind of spoiled for choice. If I absolutely had to, I would go with Sharknado.
Okay.
Simply because it has spawned six, count them, six movies.
Yeah.
About sharks being sucked up into a tornado and then eating people while in the tornado.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
Wheaton?
What's your most ludicrous? What's your most ludicrous, ridiculous plot movie?
I mean, that's a good one. That's a really good one. And I will definitely not diss that choice. I think my runner-up has to be, and I don't remember the full title, the second Lovely Creatures and How to Baste Them, whatever that film is.
Oh, the Newt's Scalamander books?
Yeah, when I saw that film, I'd seen the first one. And then a couple of years later, they made another one because, of course, they did.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and I kept thinking, wow, I guess, age is really starting to show for me because they're referencing things. I don't remember these at all. And I just started, a scene would end, and I finally just started giggling because it's like, I have no clue what the hell is going on. And at the end of the film, I went home and rewatched the first one and realized it wasn't me. The film literally makes no sense at all.
No, it does not. It's about six different movies they threw in a blender and then just stuck them together.
So that's my runner-up, but... No. My first choice, I'm going to have to agree with Dan Schaefer. It was Highlander 2.
Because
they took a really fun film with a pretty interesting premise that was well done and enjoyable. And they said, we can poop on that. Let's poop on that and film us pooping. And that's what it was. And even worse, when we went to do that episode with Highlander 2, we couldn't even find the original print where they had Planet Zeist in it. They cut it all out.
They cut it out and the chickens.
Yeah.
At least, lean into it.
Although, quite honestly, I would also like to just mention Geostorm.
Sorry,
my voice just does that whenever I say that. I don't know what it is.
What do you do? Doesn't that hurt?
No, it just happens. I don't know how it happens. It's just whenever I'm not going to say it again, but phew. But yeah, those were great answers.
Yep, those were terrific, and we want more. So we got this other question brought on by this week's movie. What acting team-up or pairing have you never seen but would like to?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Who?
Yeah.
I'm going to say people living, because otherwise it's just too broad.
Yeah.
If you really have one, a historical one of some actor who is no longer with us and some actor who is, go ahead. But
Humphrey Bogart and Robin Williams. Perfect.
Humphrey Bogart would have snapped his neck in 5 minutes.
What would those two people have to say to each other? I don't know.
Yep.
But yeah, that's cool.
Yes, and we will tell you how to manage this at the end of the episode. But before we move on, we do have something from our
listener mail.
Here we have one from that fine Teutonic gentleman, Franz Josef Halbwitz.
Yeah, yeah, he's good.
In Mike's intro to the sneakers episode, at about the 1 minute 36 second mark, these Germans are so precise.
They are.
He refers to phone freak Captain Crunch writing articles for 2400.
I did.
By now, I'm sure you've received any number of messages harumphing that the famous hacker journal is called 2600 after the magic frequency that allowed phone freaks to hack the phone system. Quite true. A simple mistake? That's what we're supposed to think.
I told you.
But the signal was too obvious. 24 in hexadecimal is the code for the dollar sign in ASCII. Additionally, in the EBCDIC, that's EBCDIC, and no, I don't know what it stands for, encoding used by IBM mainframes, it means bypass or inhibit presentation. So, Mike said dollars inhibit the presentation. In other words, Max Mike Movies has the goods on something or someone who will need to pay up to keep them from spilling the beans. He's on to us.
Oh, my beans!
And here's another coincidence. Oh, and here's another coincidence? I don't think so. According to the Wikipedia Mind Control Disinformation Network, the elite hacksaw John Captain Crunch Draper, mentioned in the intro, served in the U.S. Air Force at Charleston Air Force Base in Maine. Charleston Air Force Station does not exist anymore, if it ever did. But the site is now the Mountain View Correctional Center, a medium security prison. Draw your own conclusions. I better stop here. I've already said too much. You fool! You've doomed us all!
Take the aliens to Maine!
Yeah. Very shrewd, Herr Halbwitz.
Very interesting, yeah.
Too shrewd.
Very interesting, but stupid.
But
no.
Keep those cards and confusing letters coming.
No, we love your letters, Herr Halbwitz.
We do.
Thank you.
Yep. And now, the facts. Budget. $45 million. And I think we all know where that money went. It was to salaries of a bunch of serious names.
Yeah, hopefully
mostly
a good chunk of it
Plummer.
To Spike Lee, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The box office, $186 million.
Oh.
This did pretty darn well.
That's interesting because I had never heard of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Directed by our old friend Spike Lee. I think this is our third Spike Lee movie.
I believe so.
With the She Gotta Have It and Do the Right Thing. The scene in the coffee shop where the police are interviewing Vikram, the fellow with the turban.
Yep.
Completely improvised.
Oh.
According to Spike Lee, Denzel Washington ad-libbed the line, "I'll bet you can get a cab, though." And when he did, Spike almost ruined the take by laughing so loud at the line.
Wow.
Also, the interrogation scenes were mostly ad-libbed. Paul's line, calling one of the detectives they were interrogating a wassa wassa, was improvised. So is Detective Frazier's response, "How do you say Riker's Island in Spanish?"
Ah. I don't know what wasa wasa meant, but okay.
They made it up. It basically meant see somebody from outside your neighborhood.
I thought it was crisp bread, but...
No, that's just one wasa.
Oh.
Wasa 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 is two pieces.
Isn't the capital of Washington State? Mm.
Yep, wasa wasa Washington.
See?
Also according to Spike Lee, he and Willem Dafoe met in the men's room during the intermission of the play Julius Caesar, in which Denzel Washington appeared. As they were standing side by side in the men's room at the sink, I assume, Spike said, "We should work together." And Dafoe replied, "Yes, yeah, Spike, we should." And that was it. Spike sent him the script. He agreed to do it.
Okay.
The scene in which the young boy shows Dalton the video game he's playing on his PSP.
Yeah.
That was not in the original script. Spike Lee added it to make a comment on gangster rap's infatuation with violence. The game is not real.
Really?
But it was created by an animation house.
Mm.
Spike Lee asked them to come up with the animation for, quote, "the most violent game ever." And they deliver!
Yeah.
The ground scenes, like outside and at ground level, for the bank were filmed inside a real bank. All the underground scenes were filmed in a movie set in Brooklyn.
Did you find out where that bank was?
I did not.
I was wondering if it was actually New York. I'm betting it wasn't. Oh, no, wait, it's Spike Lee. He does tend to like to shoot.
Yeah, very likely was. This is something I missed, maybe you didn't. The pizza that the police give to the robbers is from Sal's.
Yeah.
Yep, which is a reference from Do the Right Thing. Missed that completely? Oh. You caught it. Okay.
I did catch it, but it's also the name of the pizza place around the corner from where I grew up. And I swear, every city has a Sal's pizza. So, but yeah.
You never went in there and say, hey, how come we don't have any comic book characters up on the wall?
No. Well, no, not really once, really.
Apparently, the original director for this film was going to be Ron Howard.
Oh.
But Russell Crowe showed him the script for Cinderella Man, and Howard went off to do that.
I liked that movie.
That's apparently very good. Never seen it.
It is a good movie.
Whole movie thing shot in 39 days.
Okay.
Spike Lee claims that at the time he was making the movie, he wasn't aware that riddles had been a major part of the plot in another thriller set in New York City, Die Hard with a Vengeance. Gosh, how could he forget that one? He said if he'd known that, he would have cut out the riddle scene. Jodie Foster's character, Madeline White, was based on a real-life fixer, a French man known for problem-solving and negotiations at the highest levels of both American and international conflict. He once described his job this way. If you have a problem, first you call the police. If they can't help you, you call the FBI. If they can't help you, then you call me.
You know, she's often reminded me of a French man.
I'm a very short French man, yes.
Mais oui.
The soundtrack for Inside Man features the song Chaya Chaya, composed by A.R. Rahman, which was originally from a Bollywood Hindi film, Dil Se, from 1998. Songs featured in the opening credits of the film. A remix of the song, titled Chaya Chaya Bollywood Joint, plays during the end credits and features Punjabi MCs' added rap lyrics about people of different backgrounds coming together in order to survive. Make of that what you will.
I can't.
There's actually a callback to, really, to a movie we talked about before from the 70s, Dog Day Afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Marsha Jean Kurtz, who is the woman hostage who doesn't want to get undressed, was one of the hostages in Dog Day Afternoon.
That poor woman. It's been 50 years and she's still a hostage.
She keeps going to the wrong bank, man. I mean,
such
obviously
a
she quit
she
working
is.
The other one. And Lionel Pena, who delivers pizza to the beleaguered hostages here, delivered pizza to the hostages in Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Yep. The sort of Albanian princess, Ilinia, the woman who comes in to translate the recorded conversation, is in fact Romanian in real life. So we've got Albanian washing going on there.
Mm.
The part was played by 31-year-old actress and WKA martial arts champion, Florina Petchu.
Huh?
Yeah. Who knew?
Well, luckily she got to use her martial arts
yes.
film. Hmm.
The main music theme was reused by Spike Lee in the Charlottesville sequence from Black Klansman in 2018.
Oh.
In the scene where Detective Frazier and the other cops are trying to figure out Dalton Russell's riddle, Captain Darius points out that money isn't actually made from paper, it's fabric.
It's true.
Counterfeiters refer to fake money as paper for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
Willem Dafoe also played a professional counterfeiter in the thriller To Live and Die in L.A.
I believe that not only is it made of cotton, I think it's still only made in one place in Connecticut. Like there is a place that makes the paper.
It's both cotton and plastic fibers now.
Now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fairly recent. The Cartier diamond ring, that's kind of a central plot point, is the real thing. The movie borrowed it from Cartier for 3 days. It's worth over $1.5 million.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's one big honking diamond.
Grandma's doorknob.
The alleged shootout between the police and the robbers wasn't in the original script. Lee said he added it because he felt that, quote, it was a good time to inject some action into the movie.
Yep. We'll get back to that.
Yeah. At the beginning of the movie, the slogan on the thieves' stolen van kind of offers a clue to the method of the heist. We don't leave until the job is done.
Yes.
They take that all the way.
Yeah.
Three classic Al Pacino movies are mentioned by the characters. This isn't an accident. Spike Lee loves Al Pacino, probably because they can look each other eye to eye.
Mean but true.
Dalton says, I don't need your status reports, Serpico.
Yeah.
Guess what that one's from?
Frazier said, Man on the Moon.
Exactly. Frazier said, you saw Dog Day Afternoon. You're stalling. And Detective Mitchell, Chiwetel Ejiofor, says, I say we go after them all, Keith, Michael Corleone style.
Oh, I missed that one.
And a tiny thing, at the end of the movie, Frazier's girlfriend is reading Gotham Diaries, which is a novel co-written by Spike Lee's wife, Tanya Lewis Lee.
And Batman.
And Batman. Well, there's plenty of other stuff, but I think that covers most of it.
Oh, I should think so.
So now, the plot. A peaceful day in Gotham City. But what's this? A ragtag riot of rowdy robbers planning to purloin a pile of purchasing power? Great Scott! Helpless hostages! Confounded cops! Only the dynamic duo of Frazier and Mitchell can conquer this complex conundrum. They're matching mental mechanics with the dastardly Dalton and his Legion of Steves. Also in the mix is that smiling siren of certainty, Madeline White, and her enigmatic employer, Mr. Case. The dynamic duo are deftly dodging doubtful doggerel and aptly analyzing Albanian antics. But there's more to this than meets the eye. What mysterious machinations motivate Mr. Dalton? Wheels within wheels? Who is the true criminal in this cryptic caper? Stay tuned and find out. Same Denzel time, same Denzel channel.
The film.
Wow, you have deeply wounded me.
Then my work here is done. Talk to you next week, everybody.
Yeah, goodbye. Max Mike movies. It's not going to be Flintstones. It's not going to be Gilligan's Island. It's going to be Batman. But don't forget Robot Monster.
Robot Monster, yeah. Yep. So, Mike, had you not seen this movie?
I'd never even heard of it.
You never heard of it? I mean, admittedly, it came and went fairly quickly, I think.
Not that quickly. It made more than three times its budget.
True.
So now, wait, did you see it when it came out?
I did. I saw it in the theater.
Oh, okay. I didn't, and when, like, you suggested it last episode, I can't say last week, last month, I did not know it had anything to do with Spike Lee. So when his name popped up, I'm like, but what?
Yeah. It's kind of a surprise because it's not the sort of movie I would have thought he did, except it does take place in New York, and New York is a character.
And it's nice because there's actually people of color in it.
Yes, lots of them.
You know, just like New York.
Yes.
Depending on who's making the movie. But yeah.
Yes, no, according to Woody Allen, there's only one black person anywhere in New York.
Yeah, how would he know? He's at home all the time on a date. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
A date with your family.
Oh,
God. Ow. Ow. Deeper and disturbing.
So you saw it in the theater?
I did.
Oh, okay, cool. Did you like it at the time? Do you remember?
I did. I liked it a lot. And on the big screen, it kind of works very well. I don't think it's necessary, but it does add a different dimension to it.
Hmm.
Even though a lot of this is very close up and very claustrophobic.
Yeah,
a lot of shots in rooms, inside vans, that kind of stuff.
Well, and like a lot of banks or buildings, old buildings of that era in New York, they're not that grand and sweeping because even then real estate was at a premium. So But we have a cast we should probably start off with.
Yes, we should. And what a cast. That really threw me when I saw who was in it. Denzel Washington, Oscar winner right there.
Yep.
He's Detective Keith Frazier. If I am taken hostage, I want him to get me out.
I'd like him to take me hostage. No, I'm just kidding. No, he's great. I mean, the only time I've ever seen Denzel not great was Much Ado About Nothing.
And that was not his fault.
No, and because remember we saw him in, was it Macbeth?
Yes, and he learned.
Oh,
he got good.
Yeah, yeah. So I think he looks good. You like him. He seems competent.
I love how he dresses. He is so damn stylish in this.
Well, good for him, too. You know, anybody who can actually look nice these days, because that's not usually a common thing. Mm-hmm. So it's Denzel. He generally does a great job, and I think he does just fine in this.
I dig his partner, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I've
always been a big fan of his ever since Kinky Boots. He is terrific.
I don't think he had enough to do. I just don't think he had enough to do.
They didn't give him enough, but he's a great support for Denzel, and they just were. You believe they were their partners. You know, they have real chemistry with each other.
Yeah, you skipped around a little bit, but that's okay. I see why you did it.
Yeah, Clive Owen doing his best American accent again.
He does it a lot better than other Brits. Or is he Irish? I can't remember.
I don't either.
He's not American. That being said, I have not seen Clive Owen give us a very broad range. Mm-hmm. I tend to see Clive Owen, and he tends to do more or less this.
Yeah, kind of. He tends to be the very serious, very quiet.
Threatening.
Yeah, very bad guy. Very scary.
Yeah, and he's very good at that. Yep. I would say his performance, I thought, was fine. I want to come back to his character, though.
Okay.
Jodie Foster.
Oh, I think she's great in this.
Really?
She can go head-to-head with Denzel. And literally, she goes head-to-chest with Denzel.
Yeah.
No, you didn't?
I thought she was fine up until she's actually talking to Clive Owen. And then I'm like, I don't believe you.
Really?
Like, I don't get the toughness. And we'll come back to plot and character later. I think this is probably my least favorite performance of Jodie Foster. I didn't really buy it, honestly, all the way through. In the beginning, I did. And then the more I saw of her do it, the less I really bought it. But I'm not sure how much of that's her. It may be the writing.
Might be. But I got to say, I liked her. I found her very imposing, considering she's 3 feet tall. That's really impressive. And the fact that she has such presence, this tiny little woman, and she can stand toe-to-toe with Denzel Washington, who is a force of nature.
Yeah.
And still hold her own and more. I thought that was impressive. And I like the fact that she's almost always smiling.
Yeah. Again, I don't know how much it was her and how much was the writing, but she kept basically making these sort of veiled threats, none of which she made good on. And I just sort of stopped believing that she was that capable. I don't know. But
all right. Do you agree to disagree? Then we got Captain Von Trapp, Christopher Plummer.
Who didn't sing? What the hell?
I know. I would have thought,
Where's his eye patch and his Klingon accent? Don't forget.
Didn't even quote Shakespeare. Yeah.
Wasn't he also in Stella Star? I think he was.
Well, yes, he was the Emperor, the good guy.
Yeah.
And he was also in Dragnet with Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks.
A varied career, let's put it that way.
Yeah, let's just say Christopher doesn't say no to a lot of movies.
But I think he does very well in this part, in that he's meant to be an old executive, but a kindly one. That part I didn't understand at all. A kindly executive? What's that?
Well, you can see why he's trying in some way to make up for his past, which we'll get to.
Yeah, but I think he does fine. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fine. However, Willem Dafoe, I'm going to go with one of our old standbys, almost entirely wasted.
I guess, except he's absolutely believable as a New York cop. But it's true. And I think he does this on purpose in this. He makes himself fade more into the background.
Which is not what you want from Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe is there to be Willem Dafoe.
I suppose. I think it worked.
I think he worked fine. I just don't know that he needed to be there.
Yeah.
It could have been many other actors. And I'm not sorry he was there. It's just there's an intensity about Willem Dafoe that he just left at home because the part didn't require it. And it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just he could have been in many other people. And I want more from Willem Dafoe. So, and then there was a bunch of Steves. These are the Steves I know. These are the Steves I know.
and some other people. Steve. Yeah, there's a lot of then there's a lot of and the rest. Some of whom are good.
Oh, it's not that they're bad. They're just
their parts are so small. They're just on for like 30 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. In general, acting is pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's very good in this.
Did have some questions here about the beginning of the film and the heist that we get into.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but why is it in movies banks are always so darned crowded?
It's New York. They're very busy in New York. There's a lot of money in New York. Money. Business.
It's like I have never been in a bank. The only time I've been in a bank that's been that crowded was I was working in a bank when it had been sold to another bank that people didn't like. And we spent about 6 months closing accounts because people did not like the new bank. And so we often, like on a Saturday, would have a line going out the door. But otherwise, in general. Every time there's going to be a heist, thankfully, there's a whole bunch of people in there, and they're all looking upset, and they're all looking bored, and they're all looking like, you know, frustrated and whatever, but whatever. Then this guy walks in full painter gear, and he's got goggles on, and he's got our sunglasses, and he's got two valises, and nobody's suspicious. Nobody.
Oh, no. One of the guards starts to walk over to him.
Not until the other people come in. They leave him alone. He just walks in. He's setting up the flashlights. No one's even talking to him to turn off the cameras. Nothing.
I question a little bit if you just point an infrared flashlight at a security camera, if that will somehow overload it or blind it.
I wonder if Hal Hobbitz knows. Maybe he'll tell us. Yeah, it does seem a little weird. Like, why would the camera be sensitive to infrared at all? So,
don't know.
Also, we get something I have not seen anywhere in decades. We get a cop on the beat.
Yep. We have those. They have those in New York, and they certainly did back in 2006.
Do they?
Yeah, they do.
I thought they all just drove around now. Nobody walked or anything.
No. They've stopped. They've got foot patrols. There are too many places in New York you can't get to by car, at least not without murdering 90 people. Not that it stops them always.
I guess. I just was surprised because I literally, not even in a movie, I couldn't remember the last time there was a beat cop. It was just like, okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I thought that sequence I thought was interesting. Like, wow, Dalton is not even trying to hide the fact that the bank is being robbed. He wants that known right away.
Yes, he does. I want to come back to that plot thing a little later, if that's okay. I will say there's a point in the film, you may have noticed it was kind of subtle. You may not have seen it, but there was this point in this film, actually two points, where I was just suddenly thirsty for Pepsi. Were you?
Yeah, I was also thirsty for Dell computers for some reason.
Yeah, but really Pepsi. I was very thirsty really wanted for a Pepsi.
Yep.
I mean, it didn't have Raymond Burr in it, and there was no Godzilla, but it was nearly as bad as the Dr. Pepper machine.
You can see where some of that $45 million came from.
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, product placement's bad enough, but when it's like, hey, half your screen is a vending machine, come on. Yeah. Did you feel like this film gave you the impression of a Spike Lee film for the most part?
Not really, no. There was no like sudden rapid speech. The way it was shot was different. I think even the way they would cut from scene to scene. The only moment that really made me think Spike Lee is when they may or may not have killed a hostage and you see Denzel zooming toward the camera without walking. That was very Spike Lee.
I was like, is he on a Roomba? What the hell's going on with that?
Yeah. I like the idea. The idea is he doesn't know that he's moving. He doesn't remember that he's moved, but he's moved. So we're getting it more from his perspective.
I thought the sudden flash forwards to the interviews with the hostages felt Spike Lee-ish because he does do a lot of... But, you know, Spike Lee, we talked about this, I remember, in Do the Right Thing, that Spike Lee had a really interesting way of breaking the fourth wall that was different the way other people... And he did that, I think, also in She's Gotta Have It when we watched that, too.
Yeah, I think he
didn't really do that here. And otherwise, it mostly just felt like your average action film. Like, it didn't really feel Spike Lee-ish to me, which is kind of too bad.
The one thing that did is, like I say, where he makes the city a character. A moment I really like is when they're listening to this this tape.
The Albanian president?
Of the president of Albania, Hordnan Flagnabak, or whatever his name is.
Your pronunciation is flawless.
It is. I'm sorry, it's Enver Hoxha. They're like, we can't get anybody from the Albanian consulate. We can't get any translators. He goes, put it on the speaker. This is New York. Someone will know what it is. And it's true. So this utility worker comes over going, hey, man, I know what that is. That's Albanian. Oh, so you speak Albanian? No, my ex-wife and her family did. But believe me, I know what it sounds like.
Yeah, I've actually worked with a number of Albanians where I work.
Yeah?
Yeah, just I don't know if there's an Albanian population in the Metro Detroit area. I guess there must be. But otherwise, I would never have, you know, run into somebody. But New York doesn't surprise me either.
That was one thing that kind of did surprise me about that sequence. They've been listening to it. They don't notice that it's just one guy monologuing. Even if you don't know what he's saying, you could tell it was the same person.
Yeah.
I think it would be pretty quick to figure out that that's actually, you know, a recording.
Maybe, but I also could see some of this thing going, nope, don't recognize his line. He's just, I don't know what he's saying. And then just ignoring it because nothing interesting is happening.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that when the Christopher Plummer's character, Arthur Case, calls in Madeline White, very well named.
She is. She certainly is.
They do something, and I'm like, why are you doing this? They go and meet outside and then walk in front of tons and tons of people discussing their secret plans.
This happens in so many movies. This is such a trope. It's like, well, we're outdoors. No one can hear us because sound only travels 6 inches when you're outside. That's just science.
Well, often they'll do it like on a park bench somewhere alone. In this case, they are literally walking after bench full of people. I don't know about you, but if I heard blah, 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 secret Nazi stuff, blah, 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 I'd start paying attention.
Yeah, that's the thing. People go, oh, nobody pays attention to each other. People pay attention all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, some people sit and intentionally wait to overhear interesting conversation.
Sure.
Not that I would know anything about people like that, but it happens.
Yeah.
And yes, there are keywords that would make somebody go, huh?
Yeah. It's not like they were disguising anything.
No.
And it's like, oh, you're this amazing fixer person who like takes cares of stuff and is very discreet. Why aren't you doing that now?
They were being very non-specific about stuff. He never says Nazi when they're out there, neither does she.
Did you have any problem figuring out they were talking about Nazi stuff?
Well, I'd already seen the movie, so
I hadn't, and I had no trouble figuring it out. They might as well have been saying Atsine. I mean, because it was, it was weird. Like, I would have shot that without there being people between them and us. Like, why are they walking near people? I don't understand that. So, I had an early prediction. I don't know if you thought this when you saw the film, but fairly early on, I just wrote, prediction, this is not a bank heist.
I was pretty sure this wasn't a standard bank heist. I knew it wasn't the cash. To me, the big tip-off is when Dalton is talking to the little boy who's playing with the PSP.
Right.
And they're sitting on bales of money. Which I am like, oh, come on, that's got to be so uncomfortable because, as we all know, toss, don't stack.
That's right. Remember our guide there.
Wolf of Wall Street taught us, toss, don't stack.
Otherwise, it hurts the whores.
Yeah.
Don't want that.
Nope. And all I could think was, wait a minute. The money is, I thought that was a kind of a signal that, A, the money isn't the issue here. Also, it's a sort of softening of Dalton's character. So far, he seemed either really smart or crazy. And it's actually a very nice scene with the kid.
It is. And I think that also helps us with Denzel, because Denzel says, I can tell he's not going to kill anybody. I can just tell he's not going to do it. And so it's helping us, or helping reinforce, that Denzel is capable and smart, which is good. Mm-hmm. That being said, we literally don't know anything about Dalton. Anything at all.
Not a thing. Don't know about any of them.
Nope. I mean, the other Steves, who cares?
That's our first indication, though, that he may not be a monster, that he's not evil.
Well, he does beat on people, so we know there's violence in him. To be fair, the people he beat on, I probably would have, too, and I'm not a violent
person.
They're
kind of begging for
it. I'm not going to wear a mask. The hell with these people, these bank robbers with guns, the hell with them. I'm like, no, I didn't mean it.
Oh, no, I forgot my cell phone. I forgot it. It's not in the other room. No.
Well, also, I don't remember because it's been too long, but didn't flip phones have passcodes?
Not always.
No, okay. I literally couldn't remember.
By 2006, they were really starting to. But a lot of people just flat out didn't use them.
Okay. I guess we didn't have that much on there. I mean,
no.
Here's a fuzzy photo of blank squatch. That's all you're going to get off my phone.
Cryptozoological marvel.
Yeah. Okay. So we follow along this plot and we suddenly realize that we don't know what's going on either. Yeah. And I kind of felt like I was in Denzel's seat. And I thought that was skillfully done. Like, suddenly realized something's not right either about the same time Denzel's character does too, Detective Frazier.
Yeah. I like that they don't treat us like we're stupid.
No, which is nice.
Because he doesn't spell everything out. They don't spell it out. It's like, okay, you're going to figure this out right along with me.
There is a twist, in case people don't know. And, you know, we can probably, we'll avoid it as long as we can.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah.
One of the things that kind of tipped me off was my note, for a bank heist, it's not easy, but it is pretty chill. Like, once they get people where they want them, and except for the occasional whiner and screamer, not much is really going badly, but also not much is really going on.
Well, you notice at no point does anyone start stuffing money into bags or anything. There's no plan for actually moving the currency.
Well, we see them digging a hole, and I'm like, are they going to literally flush the money down the toilet? Like, I don't know. But it's like, why? You're going to tell us what that hole's for, right? And they kind of do and they kind of don't.
Well, he says that's a good looking blank hole.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's later the latrine.
Well, but so what? I mean.
Again, that was a throw off. I thought, my first thought was they're tunneling out.
Or they're going to hide it and come back later, or they're going to come from, I don't know. It was weird. I didn't get it off.
No, I actually liked the way it ended up. But
I did love that when the beat cop calls it in and we suddenly have like all these police vehicles showing up. One of the police vehicles is the Judy Hopps parking ticket cart.
Well, someone's got to manage those damn parking violations, don't they?
Did you see that thing zoom in? It's like, why is that here?
When they call for everybody, everybody shows up.
Well, of course, that's not the only Zootopia reference, because at one point, Denzel has the Judy Hopps carrot recording pen, which he uses.
It wasn't a carrot.
But he does use
a recording pen.
He does use it on Jodie Foster.
I do like that line. Wow, this is James Bond stuff. You can get them on Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, it's before AirTags, but same thing, right?
Yeah,
you can track people. I have to say that when Jodie Foster shows up and she plays her little get into jail free card, I was just like, I just can't see the police actually allowing this. I just can't.
They got ordered to from the mayor. Of course they're going to do it.
It's
political. These guys want their careers to last.
I guess I just didn't buy it. And then I didn't buy them letting her out.
Oh, I bought that completely. She was an X factor. They didn't know who she was. They didn't know what she was. Also too smart to allow unfettered access. And what are they going to do? Kill her? They obviously
They did put her in a suit and shut and tied her up and shoved her in the bathroom.
They probably didn't have one that fit her. She's too short.
Yeah, that's it. That was their problem. They were worried about the fit of the suit.
No, I think, he figured he knew who she was working for, because who else would send her in? And I think he was using her as a messenger. I think he wanted to scare Case.
Well, let's get to that point, because we're getting close-ish on time.
Yeah, yeah.
So it comes down to a point, spoiler, it's in the title of the song, that this is not a bank heist and that it is, in fact, targeted.
Yeah. They don't want the money. They want the contents of one specific unlisted safe deposit box, which turns out to belong to Arthur Case, who is the owner of the bank and has bags and bags of diamonds in it.
And his I'm a Nazi file, which he kept from World War II.
Yeah. Why? That, I have to admit, I don't get why he kept it. Except, no, I do. I actually kind of do. One of his lines, I sold my soul and I've been trying to buy it back. I think he kept it as a reminder of what he was. I think he kept it as a sort of personal punishment. Because this here is a guy who, as we find out, was a war profiteer.
Yeah.
He worked with the Nazis. He probably betrayed people.
Oh, he said One of his best friends. He's like, I could have saved them, but the money was too good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a scumbag you are.
Yeah, I wish I could say that was either made up or that there was only one person like that. There were an awful lot of them.
Yeah.
But he ended up, the diamonds, that was a famous thing that was looted from a lot of the Jews, because they would put all their money into them because they were small, easy to hide, easy to take with you.
And easy to insert.
Yes. No, yeah, they would eat them sometimes.
Oh, yeah, that too. Easier to get out that way and not as dirty.
Yeah.
So my question is, how did Clive Owen's character find out about this?
And we have no idea.
Nope. And why was he doing this?
Well, as he says at the end, don't get me wrong, I was doing it for the money, but money's no good if you can't look at yourself in the mirror.
Okay.
The implication is he felt some kind of obligation to do this. We don't know what. We don't know why. No clue.
Nope.
Doesn't bother me.
It bothered me a lot. The whole ending bothered me. It was just very, if one thing, it took too long. Like they, like once they'd left the bank, it's like, okay, we're going to explain that. And then we don't get any motivation for him doing what he did at all. And we do something that I was very kind of sorry about. Because apparently Dalton Russell, when he bumps into Detective Frazier, who doesn't notice, he slips a diamond into Denzel's pocket. And later, Denzel gets the diamond, and it's like, he's going to keep it.
Yes, of course he is. Why wouldn't he?
Because we got the impression, or we were getting the impression, that he actually was a good guy. And now...
he is a good guy, but he also, as he says, they got theirs, I want to get mine.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Now I really am doubting the whole fact. So he was up on internal review because he was part of a case where $140,000 never showed up at the end of the case. And he was like, I didn't take it. At the end of the movie, I'm not so sure. Especially because when they come to him and say, hey, guess what? They found the money. Guess where they found it? He says, I don't care. I don't want to know. I wanted to know.
He doesn't just say, I don't want to know. He says, was it in my bank account? Was it in my vacation house? Was it in my wallet? Then I don't want to know. It's like, if it wasn't me, I don't care. It's just been too much a part of his life.
I guess. I don't know. That's how the whole film felt to me at the end. It was like, yeah, we're not going to tell you.
Now, before we finish up, we got the five questions for this series. One, is the loot worth all the effort?
Oh, dear God, it's a huge, giant bag of diamonds?
Yeah, I think so. Even if he did leave the Cartier ring, which probably would have been really difficult to sell. Yeah, bags and bags of diamonds, totally worth it.
Well, now, wait. If I understand, you know more about this than I do. If I understand correctly, modern diamonds are often marked in some way, aren't they? Traceable.
Yeah,
Diamonds from that far back probably weren't.
No, these are untraceable.
I know. Wouldn't that give them kind of a little extra?
Oh, it would give them a big edge. Yeah. Much easier to fence. Absolutely.
So, and there were bags of diamonds.
Lots of diamonds.
Yep. So yeah, the loot was worth it.
Two, is the plan believable?
I guess so. But I still just don't understand how he knew about it. There were no records of the box itself. So how would he know about it to even think to do it?
He had inside people on the bank.
But how would they know? They would never have been in it.
We don't know. We have no idea. We're not told.
I know, and that's the problem.
That doesn't have to do with the believability. That's the motivation. The plan itself, I think, is incredibly well executed and very believable.
Except the part where he stinks at the end.
Well, there's that. He probably we even notice when he's leaving the bank, some employee walks by him, stops and goes, turns around like, what the hell?
Oh, come on. It's New York.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just, why are you coming out of our basement?
There is that. We're like, hey, is that Clive Owen?
Yeah, but I guess the thing that was nice about it was that he kept doing things that seemed normal for a bank robbery and ended up being not normal the way he was doing them. So we were sort of strung along in a good way.
Also, I thought it was so well planned and so well executed. The whole thing of making all the hostages dress identically, making them wear masks. You couldn't tell them from the other robbers. So the robber could just walk out with them.
Well, during the interviews, I couldn't tell which one was which. I had my suspicions, but I'll tell you this one. The guy playing Chaim would not have picked him at all.
Nope, but turns out he was in on it.
He was bad.
Does the security as depicted make sense? It's a bank, sure.
Sadly, yeah. A lot of people who are in store or in bank security depend. I mean, a bank, they're probably allowed to do something, but in like department stores and malls and stuff, they're literally not allowed to do anything.
No, they call the cops, they call security, but they
what is your job? Standing all there all day, just watching nothing happen.
Yeah,
and it's potentially years of doing that. So the fact that the security guards aren't right on top of things, although, again, the guy in the painter's thing with the two bags, nobody comes up to him. But after that, sure.
Are the guards / cops / defenders too underpowered?
I don't think so. No.
I think the thing I like about it is the cops are just as competent.
Yeah.
This isn't any of those goofy, Keystone cops. Ah, these ridiculous gendarmes, Watson sort of cops.
Oh, I tripped over this money.
Exactly. No. Oh, where did he go? That's the fellow with the false mustache. Maybe he saw him.
I also like that Denzel is obviously smart and capable and good at his job in general. Yep. So,
And now here's an interesting one. Do we find ourselves rooting for the heisters?
Well, interestingly, this is one of the few heist films I've ever seen where throughout most of the movie, the answer is no. They're bad guys. They're robbing a bank. In the end, I guess so. I don't know.
I think so.
I mean, they're hurting Christopher Plummer. Who would care about that?
Well, Maria probably would, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. But I think also one of the lessons of the film is everyone's corrupt to some level, which is kind of sad.
Mm. Yeah. But you know what isn't sad, or is? We've come to the end, and it's time.
What, time for what?
Oh,
that was your cue. Yes,
that was my cue. You missed it. You clawed.
No, I'll just edit this part out.
You bubble-headed booby.
I'll edit that part out.
The finish.
So, Max.
Yes.
You saw it in the theater, and you remember liking it.
I did.
Have you seen it since then?
I have. Oh. At least once.
Okay.
Yeah, saw it on video.
What do you think?
I like this movie. I think it's a lot of fun. Things that are missing don't really bother me. I love the dialogue. The lines in there, like, I've got him right where I want him. Where's that? Standing right behind me with my pants down around my ankles.
Ooh.
Yikes. When Madeline White is explaining why, you know, she's talking to Case, and Case is like, you know, can I count on your discretion, even though, you know, I'm a Nazi? And she says, yeah, I have to go help Bin Laden's nephew buy a co-op on Park Avenue. We're listing you as a reference. I love that.
Oh, and she wasn't kidding either.
No.
Because we see her. That's when we meet her. She's doing that.
She's doing exactly that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I enjoy it. I think it's fun. I love the performances. I get the feeling, though, you who have never seen it before will disagree with me.
For one thing, I don't think it's a good Spike Lee film. I mean, to be fair, of the two or three I've seen, I thought this was probably the least Spike Lee of them. It was watered down for Spike Lee. And I really did not like the ending. I did not feel it was a satisfactory ending at all. It also was slow. Like, the ending just kept going and going. It's like, all right, wrap it up. Oh, he's still in there. Okay, fine. We get it. I needed to know why. And I don't understand why Clive Owen's character would decide to go after Nazis. The Jewish people in this film were, to me, this short of caricatures. Oi, yeah. I don't want to take my clothes off. How can you do this? And
I know. And the Herman Gluck. I never stole another. Nicola, to Nicola, mama.
And the guy was like, oh, I'll give you my cousin's name. He'll get you a deal on a diamond.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. It felt generally well-paced, but then there was nothing going on in the bank. Nothing. There's a long chunk of time where the people are just in the offices. We don't even look in on them. We don't know what the Steves are doing exactly. We just know that something's not right. And I would say, as a heist film, it's okay. The stuff where we don't know what's going on and we are led through the film, I think, was done skillfully. I didn't understand it. I didn't see what was coming. I knew that something was wrong. I just didn't know what it was. At the end, I was not satisfied. I just didn't find that the trip was worth it, and I probably wouldn't bother to see it again. That being said, most of the performances I thought were fine or really good. And I like Denzel anyway, so it doesn't matter. But
okay, so we have a disagreement. I say it's a thumbs up. Mike says it's a meh.
Yeah, I give it a C.
So. Okay, fair enough, But you know what also is fair?
Damn it! We're just both so bad at it. Who cares?
Clumsy transitions at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyway, our next poll question
is,
what acting team-up or pairing have you never seen but would like to? Who with who? And you can tell us that by emailing us, as Herr Haudwitz did, at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can also write us with questions, comments. Did we get this right? Was Mike wrong as usual?
Do you have any suggestions
for the group, etc.? Other series? Please do so. You can also go to our website at maxmikemovies.com and leave a comment. You can sort of find us on Mediating Socialness over there on the
Facebook and Blue Ski. We're not doing it. Go.
Yeah, I already did.
I'm going to hit you out.
And we are, of course, on the podcast app of my choice, and my choice is all of them. True. And you can join my little diamond Doris Hempelmeyer in calling our hotline to leave us a voicemail at 617-398-7266. That number, for the last time ever, I'm kidding, 617-398-7266. But we're about halfway through now. Mm. I know the long pause makes it seem longer than that, but we got more heists, more scams, more skinnies to get through. So, Mike, What is our next movie?
I'm going off script.
Ooh.
I got a suggestion from a listener who didn't write it in, didn't comment it in. He just told me at a D&D game.
Oh, okay.
And it's a film I'd never heard of. And I was like, really? This is this film and it stars who? And this was given to me by Benjamin Schleiss. He is in a D&D game I play in. And he said, yeah, I've been listening to your series. Are you going to do The Art of the Steal? And I said, the what? And he said, it's a Kurt Russell heist movie that came out like about 10 years ago. And I was like, exactly. There is a film called The Art of the Steal, starring Kurt Russell, among other people.
Okay.
And it also has Jay Baruchel in it.
Oh.
I know.
Okay.
And apparently, the theft is not what you think it's going to be. There is a twist. And I thought...
They're cornering the world's kabuki markets, aren't they?
Oh, what are kabukis worth?
Nothing. They're pancakes.
Oh. That's a deeper... Boy, is that a deeper...
Yep.
So I thought... I went and looked at the preview and said... Sure, why not? It's a film I've never heard of. I'm wondering if Max has. He hasn't.
I have not.
So next week, it's not just going to be a regular show with a lack of skill. It's going to be art. The Art of the Steal.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.